Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today, I'm joined with special guest.
Coach Nick, special guest. Oh my gosh, not that I was a special guest for a minute.
Special guest, Coach Nick. Nick, welcome to the show. It's your first time here. This is the Challenge Weekly Show where we're going to be talking about some things that are happening around the challenge this week. And did you know that it's week 7 of the challenge this week, Nick?
Wow, I know. It's going so quickly, isn't it? Week 7. Wow. We're now into the second half of the challenge. Crazy.
Yes. So week 7 technically is that tipping point into the second half of the challenge. And I think now is that fun time. You know, we've gone through that 6 weeks of the challenge where we've developed our habits, our routines. We've gone to the gym maybe for the first time, maybe for the 100th time. We've started a new training program. We've been consistent with our nutrition plan. And then now it's this last phase of the challenge, this last half of the challenge where, you know, we really start to see these amazing results come through, because it isn't really what we do at the start. It's that progress. It's that effort, that grind that really gets those results.
Yeah, the continuous and never-ending development is where you'll see the results and the habits and the routines.
But I think it's not time to become complacent in the challenge, because there's always ways that we can improve. So if you're seeing great results in this first 6 weeks, awesome. That's amazing for you. It's what we do in this next 6 weeks that really tests us, that really gives us these results that we've been looking for. And look, you might be in that position, you're 6 weeks in and you're like, oh, I'm just not seeing anything. I'm not noticing any changes or any progress. You know, the scales aren't moving, my weights aren't changing in the gym, I'm not really seeing any improvements in my fitness. What am I doing wrong? And I guess in that stage, we do need to do a bit of an audit over every aspect of our approach to the challenge. Everything from how are we sleeping? How are we doing our meal prep? How focused are we in the gym? Are we actually getting into the gym? Are we doing our steps? Are we drinking our water? All these big questions that I don't have the answers to, that only you have the answer to. And you might need to go through a process of reflection and a really humbling experience, being really strict on yourself, being like, well, am I doing everything to my best ability, or am I just kind of going through the motions? And it can be quite confronting to do that audit, right?
Yeah, self-auditing is so important, because only you really know. So, you can even trick yourself. You can, but it's really a matter of getting out of that mindset into being honest with yourself to get those results. Because as we've said so many times, nobody's 100%. So chances are sometimes even when you say you're 100%, it sometimes even means that you're really sort of trying to trick yourself a little bit. You know, that's a clue. Whereas if you said, oh, 70% or something, that's more believable and probably more achievable too. And that's fine. That'll get you results as long as you stick to it. It's about consistency with something.
And I do think that we do need to look at our lives, and it might be really obvious where our weak point is. Let's say your sleeping is really poor. Okay. You may put your hand up and go, yeah, Steve, I'm sleeping maybe 5 hours a night. We go, okay, well, can we change that? And you might go, well, I really can't. I've got young kids. I work, you know, 2 full-time jobs, and I'm trying to get to sleep as early as I can and wake up as early as I can to fit in all the training. Like, that's where I really struggle, is my sleep. We go, okay, well, that is the major weakness. We might not be able to influence that and change that, but what other things can we impact? And then, you know, can we make any positive steps? Could we go from 5 hours of sleep a night to maybe 5.5 hours sleep a night? Or could we improve the quality of your sleep by maybe getting rid of some of the blue lights in your bedroom, maybe like alarm clocks and stuff like that, or maybe altering what you're eating towards the time you go to sleep so that you get a better quality sleep. So yes, there might be some areas where we go, well, no, we can't influence that. Okay, maybe that's this big like black zone of, all right, we're not going to be touching that now, but all right, what about all these other things? Can you get all these other dominoes in line and then knock them over and be like, great, everything else is in line, it's just this one weakness, then can we make those modifications? So, you know, I understand if all of our livelihoods just aren't perfect. And I get that. You know, we all work full-time jobs. We've got kids, we've got families, we've got commitments, we've got hobbies, we've got things happening. Heck, half the country's in lockdown at the moment. Nothing's ever going to be perfect, but we can make those small changes to take control of some things.
Yeah, you can just really master the control of what you can control. Control the controllable and control it really well, because that makes a huge difference. Because none of us here have everything under control. I don't. So yeah, I mean, we're not perfect. We just do what we can. You know, you're very organized with your training systems. you know, I'm organized with my meal prep because I have to be with the family and the hours. So we just control what we can.
Yeah. And I think that's my advice to anyone who's in lockdown right now. So, you know, I'm speaking to everyone in Sydney or in New South Wales in general. I'm speaking to, I think Perth is in a bit of a lockdown. I've got Northern Territory in a bit of a lockdown. And even lockdowns looming maybe for places like Melbourne again, I hope not, and places even like Brisbane. So I think at this time, there's many things in our lives that we might not be able to control. We might not be able to control if we can go to work tomorrow, if our business is going to stay open, or if our kids are going to go to school or go to school from home, or if we're going to be able to go to the gym. So there's some things that we might not be able to control, but there are many things that we do have some influence over, we do have some control over. And it might seem a bit daunting to say, oh yeah, you know, my life's falling apart, everything's, you know, the sky is falling. But if you take a step back and think, well, I can control what time I wake up, or I can control if I go outside and get some steps, or heck, I can control if my bed gets made in the morning. And maybe that is the tipping point for you to make your bed, get changed into some active wear, go outside, go get some steps, come back home, do some push-ups, some sit-ups, and then great, happy days, we're on track. Then you do some meal prep throughout the day, and then maybe not binge on those cookies in the back of the cupboard that we all know that we have back there. So there are some things that we can control, even if it does seem like the sky is falling.
And sometimes it's a cascade of events that, so just say you do make your bed and get out there and get some steps, your mood will probably lift for the day, which will mean therefore your stress, your stress hormone will be lower. So many different things can just come from one little change that you do. You'll be really feeling on top of the world if you go for a walk. I go at 5 in the morning. It's dark. It's not that much fun, but afterwards I always feel so great, and it's a really good way for me to set up my day. And I know that I don't have to worry then about getting millions of steps after. And I feel like I've done something for myself. So that's how I start my day.
You know, when we really think about this idea of motivation versus discipline, and I think motivation really sucks because it's not consistent. It comes and goes. It can be, you can have all the motivation in the world until you get punched in the face. You know that saying, right? Or you could be the most motivated until you open your door and feel the cold breeze on your face, right? Motivation comes and goes. But what is consistent is discipline.
With motivation, sometimes if I do feel motivated when I'm about to go into the gym, I'm actually a bit scared. I'm like, slow yourself down. You're a bit too keen here. You're going to get an injury. You know, so it's sometimes like, because it hits you just every now and then where you go, whoa, I'm looking forward to this today. And then you have to actually go, no, you're not. You know, chill out, because this is chill out, woman, because this is the minute that you're going to hurt yourself. So, you know, it's so fleeting.
It is. Because like motivation closely linked is like inspiration, being inspired by someone else, or motivated, having that, you know, drive from inside. Like it's not consistent. It's not there when you want it. But what brings that motivation is previous activity. So, you know, it's that idea of getting the ball rolling, and starting it is horrible. But once it's started, all right, it's rolling, it's going. You know, you feel motivated because you're in the gym, you're halfway through your workout, and you're like, oh, well, yeah, I can finish this off. And I think just that starting point is often where we face problems, and especially in lockdown. And I can personally relate from this, because just, what is it, like 2 weeks ago, a month ago, Melbourne was in lockdowns. And there's those times where I couldn't be bothered getting up and going into my garage to train. I was like, I don't want to do this. Ugh, you know, and I kind of told myself lies. So I'd say, oh, just go in and do one set of squats and then you're done. That was a lie, Stephen. I knew you weren't going to do one set of squats. Sometimes I take that idea of this book called Eat the Frog. And the idea is that you do the hardest thing first in the day, the hardest task of the day. And then, you know, you eat the frog. It's the thing that nobody wants to do. But once you've done that, everything else seems easy. So maybe it is easiest to, first thing in the morning, you go and train. Even if you've got a whole day of nothing in lockdown, maybe just that action of doing the hardest task first, everything else seems easy. And, you know, you clean the house, you do the garden, you all those bits and pieces at home. So there are ways that you can kind of override your brain thinking power, but a lot of it just has to do with discipline and just getting in there and getting it done, which isn't an easy thing to say, but sometimes it is just as simple as just, you know, that saying, shut up and squat, like you see that on gym walls and stuff like that. Sometimes it is just be like, shut up and just go do it, you know. But I guess I that's some internal dialogue that I use. I'm not telling you personally to shut up and go do it, but sometimes it is that mental side of things.
Yeah, I definitely trick myself, but also, yeah, I definitely, it's a non-negotiable for me. So there's a few non-negotiables in my life and my day, and training is one of them. So I just, it's like, I have to wash people's clothes. It's the same thing for me. So it's not great. It's not bad. It's just one of those things. So that's what I do. I don't kind of glamorize it, but I don't make it the other way because it all adds up in the end.
Now, look, Nick, this weekly show here is weekly show number 24. So we've hit it. We are onto our full day cycle of our challenge weekly show. So if you'd like to listen to 24 hours of Coach Steve and Coach Nick talk about all things related, fitness, health, the challenge, everything in between, you can sit there for a whole day and listen to us talking. So we've hit it number 24 this week.
That's so cool. Like we can talk for 24 hours. That's cool.
And look, yes, we are in week 7 of this May challenge. So we're over halfway. And the theme of this week is recovery. So if you're listening to this and you're doing the challenge, head on over to the challenge website and check out some of the content that we've created around the idea of recovery. And, you know, as both of us have matured into our fitness careers, we now really start to highlight the importance of recovery.
Oh, it's so important. It's actually where everything happens. So it's not in the gym. It's in your recovery. It's in how well you recover. I reckon it's up there.
It is. And I think there's two different areas of recovery. There's this idea of like nervous system recovery. So we're talking about managing your stress, managing your fatigue, these types of things. And this is kind of like this idea of big picture recovery. So I'm talking about your overall human, your biopsychosocial being of recovery so that you're ready for the next session. But then we've also got this kind of small window or small picture idea where we're really talking about like that cellular level, that tissue level. And I guess one side of things with this big picture, okay, we're talking about our sleep. We're talking about our low impact activity or, you know, getting your steps up, getting the all these good things in line. But then this small picture window is we're talking about our blood flow, the perfusion to tissues, these types of things, which we can do things like soft tissue work. We're talking foam rollers. We're talking about stretching. We're talking about mobility. We're talking about maybe massage or those types of stuff. So we're really thinking about both areas of big picture, our nervous system, and then small picture, kind of like the actual tissues. How well is our tissues ready for our next bout of training?
Very true. I've only really recently just started to respect that process again, including massages, everything. And I go through periods where I just don't fit it in. I don't make the time. And then other times where I do it and I realize how important it is, because then I'll suddenly get stronger. It's like, oh, really?
Well, look, Nick, let's move on to some non-scale victories for the week. And I believe you found quite a few this week.
Everyone was NSVing, so it was cool. So I'll kick us off with Jenny Nietzsche. Now, apologies if I pronounce that wrong, Jenny. Anyway, Jenny has a good one. She said that, and this is, I quote Jenny, "My son has commented on my progress and asked about my nutrition and training. He's changed his whole lifestyle, including his family. This week, him and his family are very pleased with their results and new outlook on life. Gotta love the challenge." So it's spreading. It's like paying it forward. You know, people, you don't know who's watching you. So that's where you can also gather some strength. I think if you're having a tough time, remember that someone's watching you and absolutely inspired by you. So that's why you've got to keep going as well, because if you're doing something for your health, there'll be someone that's watching going, oh my gosh, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, I love it. Congratulations, Jenny, and congratulations to Jenny's son as well.
I know, how awesome. So now I've got Alana Lane. This is funny. She shared a hotel gym with the Tasmanian Premier. Is it Peter Goodwin?
Yeah.
Sorry, look, that's terrible that I don't know how to pronounce it. But anyway, that's exciting. That's a real non-scale victory.
Yeah, and I'm sure that, the poor Peter is a bit busy right now with everything that's happening in Tasmania. But, that's a kind of like a mini celebrity, Alana.
Love that. Love that for Alana. Love it. That's cute. And Jennifer Evans, finally, she made some cupcakes, some gorgeous-looking cupcakes with her daughter. That's one of my old favorite things to do when my kids wanted to hang out with me when they were not teenagers. And just cooked them up beautifully. It looked gorgeous. And she didn't eat any of them, which is also just such a good effort if that's what she is, that's one of her goals. And for me, that resonates because you can still participate in those activities, but you don't have to compromise your own goals. And so her daughter got to have fun with her. She got to see that cupcakes are a fine sometimes food for daughters and things, but not always for herself. So well done, Jennifer.
Congratulations. I've got a couple of non-scale victories, and I actually found all of these on the journals on the challenge website. So one of my favorite things to do is to spend some time looking through the journal posts and kind of seeing the story of some challenges. And the first one, it goes to Christina Bleakley. Now, Christina, it was a cool story where she posted a few times saying that she wasn't super committed this week and maybe fell off the wagon the next week. And then, you know, everything seemed a little bit hopeless. And then she's just made a new post saying she's back on track, meal prep's done and exercises planned. So short and sweet, but it was great to see that Christina, even though she's facing some adversity over the challenge period through those first 6 weeks of the challenge, she's back on track now. So that's an awesome victory to you know, kind of let go of the past or any mistakes or ailments or problems that we faced in the past and, you know, having that new fresh start, being like, yes, all right, I'm back onto it. So congratulations, Christina.
That's perfect, because that can inspire other people as well. So remember, you can be like Christina and get yourself back on track at any time.
The next one goes out to Lisa Bradshaw. Now, this one was quite a long post, and I believe Lisa works as a nurse. So she was highlighting nursing culture where there's lots of shift work and sweets through the night and the troubles getting to the gym and these types of things. And this was just a little snippet which kind of stood out to me. And she goes, I'm super proud of myself. Just that is really cool. She's a, I'm super proud of myself. I'm at the gym training 5 to 6 days a week. What? She says, what? And the best thing, I hate not going. I am even going before work, which I've never done in my entire life. So I think that's really cool to see from Lisa, where she hates it when she can't go to the gym, and that's, she's going before work where maybe she was going after work and these types of things. So it's great to see that shift in maybe lifestyle, where now instead of not looking forward to going to the gym as it's like a punishment or something bad going to the gym, she's kind of shifted her mindset, going, oh, you know, I'm excited to go to the gym. And if anything, I hate it when I can't go to the gym for, you know, whatever reason, let that be rest day or she's busy at work or whatever in between. So
that's so good, because she's prioritized herself. You know, she's just gone, okay, what do I need to do? And then after that, fill your own cup, and then you can fill someone else's as well. You know, you don't want to, you can't pour from an empty cup. She's filling her cup, and then she can go and look after everyone and do her amazing job. That would be extremely exhausting as well.
And the final one here, we've got Michael Kriesch, who states that he has had a marked change in my body. In the past 2 weeks, I've noticed more muscle starting to show, sleeves are getting tighter, jeans are getting looser, good results. So congratulations to Michael, where he's starting to notice a change in his body and he's noticing some clothes are fitting a little bit differently. You know, the sleeves feeling a little bit tighter is always a nice one, and the jeans feeling a little bit looser is always a nice one as well. So congratulations, Michael, and congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week.
Brilliant job, Michael. Brilliant job, everybody. We loved them. Keep them coming. Hashtag NSV, or mention them in your journals, because we do look.
We do look. Nick, let's move on to the coach's corner for the week. Would you like to start us off?
I would. I would really like to. Now, this is just a little terminology for us all, just to maybe reframe our thinking. So we've got quite a few people who I'm loving their journey, and we're all a group together, where we're, you know, doing some muscle gain together, like we're participating in muscle gain. And I just wanted to reframe the way that we talk about it, because if we call it bulking, it sort of sometimes implies that we need to gain heaps and heaps and heaps to see a change. And really, it doesn't have to be massive amounts, because if you think about it as an improvement season, it just means that you are looking at certain areas of your body, looking at what you might like to work on, obviously seeing your body as a whole and working with that towards a goal, rather than just kind of, because bulking, the word bulking can get a little bit out of hand. It makes me think of huge bodybuilders eating like massive pizzas and all these other things. And they can sort of possibly afford to, because they've got a huge amount of muscle mass in the first place, and possibly might not just necessarily be natural. So in our little natural world, we don't need to go overboard with the term bulking. So that's just what I just wanted to point that out. I don't know what your thoughts on those terms are.
Yeah, I do think that the word bulking kind of has this meaning to all of us that it's going to be like a dirty bulk or like a dreamer bulk. And these are maybe some language that we see in gyms and in bodybuilding bro worlds. But yeah, the idea of bulking is that we're just going to, you know, just put on mass in any sort of shape or form. That might mean muscle, which we hope, but that may also mean lots of body fat along with it. And we're just trying to get, you know, as massive as we can, where you're completely right. With improvement, it's improvement season. We're trying to improve our body. We're trying to improve our physique. We're trying to improve our shape. And often that takes a little bit of self-reflection to go, well, where's my weak point? Nick, you probably know exactly where your weak points are. I know where my weak points are.
100%. Every time I do it, I see more and more weak points, because that's the other awesome thing about this. This is like, oh, I'm like a new person preaching again, because when you come back from, you know, competing, and then you start, you go into this sort of honeymoon period. I think it's super compensation, actually. It's where you can eat lots of stuff and your muscles love it. Yeah, then you can really see all your points. And the more times you do it, the more muscle mass you have. So you actually end up looking leaner, even if you've got more body fat on you, which is so much fun. But the thing is, I certainly don't need to be putting on kilos and kilos and kilos of everything, because for me, I like to keep it reasonably tight at this point. And absolutely eat to my calories, but also just keep an eye on that as well and not go insane. Because I think look, let's admit it, I reckon during the lockdown last year, I just think I probably did go a little bit too insane. And I don't think it's necessarily the best idea to go absolutely ham on wheels.
I do think that like that improvement season, or that like self audit of, let's say, how you look, like from a very qualitative point of view, just an image of yourself, can be an interesting reflection, because it might highlight, let's say, a movement problem. And I say this as, you know, Dr. Steve, the osteopath. And one example would be, you know, in the clinic, I treat a lot of bodybuilders, okay, working in a gym. I see a lot of really big guys and girls coming to the clinic. And often I would point out certain areas that are underdeveloped, which they might not notice. But they might come to me and they go, oh, like my knee's really sore. I'm like, okay, sure. And then as they turn around, I'm like, hey, man, did you know that your right glute is a lot less developed than your left glute? And they're like, what do you mean? And as I pointed out, they're like, oh, yeah, actually, I do notice that my, you know, right leg feels a little bit weaker than my left leg. Okay, we found a movement-based problem, which is showing via a decrease in muscle mass. And, you know, if I use that for myself, let's say like my lower body, I think that my quads are developing nicely, my glutes are developing nicely, but my hamstrings, donuts, right? My hamstrings, calves, even donuts.
Yeah, because you've got quads of the gods. You know how much I like quads. That. Like hashtag quad man.
They don't grow anymore. They're just, anyway.
That's no, they're at their limit, but that's okay. Like they're big enough.
You know, like I would hit my hamstrings in lots of different ways in the best possible way I can. But I do find that as I load myself into a hamstring based movement, my glutes want to take over, or my lower back wants to take over. And that could be anything from like a hamstring curl to an RDL, these types of things. So I have movement based problems, which I'm still trying to solve. And you may have the same thing where maybe your shoulders aren't as developing as you want them to, but your traps are really overdeveloped. And you go, well, yeah. When you're doing a lateral raise or an overhead press, you love using your traps. You hate using your deltoids. No wonder your deltoids aren't growing. And that could be the said about almost any body part, where you go, well, geez, like look at that person's insert body part. But then you might look somewhere else and go, well, yeah, geez, like they've got a really underdeveloped bicep, but they love using their lats for a row. Okay, well, maybe there's a few problems there. So improvement season, I think there's always areas to improve. And part of that might be to take a step back, go through a proper muscle building phase so that we kink out some of those weak points so that we can develop our physique.
That's right. And if you think about it in terms of improvement season, I also think that it releases the fear of food, because it's like this food is going to facilitate your improvement. We don't know if it's going to be muscle or fat, whatever, but you actually need a little bit more body fat to complete the lifts that you need to do to actually get the muscle, to get the improvement. So I just love the idea of calling it improvement season. And I need calves, by the way. That's what I'm working on. I need to do like 1,000 calf raises a day.
Them baby cows are hard to grow, hey?
Yeah, I know. Why are calves so hard to grow? Is it because we just use them all the time and they're just used to everything?
Well, this is actually a little bit of a tricky one to answer. Well, I think that it comes down to, like, one, what's more dominant, let that be your gastroc or the soleus, and then two, the muscle fiber types, let that be type one, type two, and if they're better off in like a heavier, lighter, a lower rep range or a lower load, higher rep range type of training, a little bit of both. Are you taking it through the full range of motion? Are you using a stretch reflex? It gets tricky with carbs, but some people just genetically have great muscle fiber distribution in their gastrocs, which makes their calves like a big rock, which is cool.
Yeah. Actually, at one point I would like to discuss with you about people's genetic muscle building ability, but that's a different podcast.
Different podcast.
We'll have a chat one time.
So, Nick, I want to talk a little bit about lifting and when a lift actually begins, okay? And I think this was just a reflection that I made when I was prepping myself up for a deadlift just the other day. And I was starting to think, all right, when does the deadlift actually start, okay? And you may be thinking, well, yeah, the deadlift starts when you move the weight, okay? So that'd be, you know, you're holding onto the barbell and the barbell lifts off. All right, the deadlift begins. And I don't think so. So I think the deadlift may start a little bit earlier. So you may go, okay, well, maybe the deadlift starts as soon as you touch the barbell. So you've walked up to the barbell, you grab hold, okay, the deadlift begins. And maybe you're setting yourself up, ready to go, and then you lift off, right? And I think even then, maybe that may be a little bit late in the process of when it actually begins. And maybe when you're first walking up to the barbell, you might think, oh, well, that's when it begins. You know, you're walking up to the barbell, you're about to grab hold, and then you're ready to lift. And I think even then, that's a little bit late in the process of when the lift actually begins. And a little bit of a reflection just to make is to think about all the processes leading up to that lift as being part of the lift. So you could even say that the lift that you're about to do, or the set that you're about to do, begins at the end of your previous set. Okay. Or if it's your first set of exercise for the day, it might be your warm-up. Once your warm-up ends is when your first set begins, or the lift begins. So a few things to consider would be, one, like that mental prep, that self-talk. And an example of this is when I was leading up to do this deadlift, it was set number 3. And I knew I had to do, well, my program that I wrote was to do 3 reps. So it was 3 sets, 3 reps. Last set, I was quite gassed, and I was in my head straight away, as soon as I finished that second set, I'm like, yep, I'm going to do 2 reps for the next set, set number 3. And I spent ages trying to talk myself out of it, being like, no, you've got 3 reps, you can do 3 reps. But then another part of me was like, no, you're only going to do 2 reps. You've got 2 reps in the tank. That's what's going to happen. And all that mental prep leading up to it, no matter how I did that lift, I knew that I was only going to get 2 reps. And what happened? I only got 2 reps because I just didn't want to do that 3rd rep. So I convinced myself that I only had 2 reps in. Maybe I had 3. Maybe I just had a good auto regulation that I knew, yep, you're only going to do 2 no matter what you do. But the idea is that that mental prep is a big part of it. The other part of it is the visualization, that visualization aspect of the lift, where you visualize mentally what it looks like when you make that lift or complete that exercise. And we see this a lot in sports psychology. So those athletes out there, you know, let that be any sport, from footy to archery to swimming to synchronized dance, or whatever it is, there's a huge element of visualization, mentally preparing themselves and visualizing them in victory, or visualizing themselves nailing that precision or whatever aspect of their own craft. And I think that is super relevant in weightlifting or exercising in general. And there was some interesting research that I did come across once upon a time, which was talking about the neurological response in a muscle, and just thinking about contracting that muscle led to some neurological activity in that muscle group. So let's say you had an injury, for example, and this is what the paper was. It was an injury, I think it was like a hamstring based injury, and they encouraged this person to visualize themselves running or lifting or something similar to, even though they were just sitting there, because I think it was like a torn hamstring or surgery hamstring, something like that. And they found that there was some neurological firing, the nerves were firing into their hamstring just from that person visualizing it. And I think that's important in our craft in fitness, to visually prepare yourself, being like, okay, I can imagine what it looks like. Even if you need to close your eyes, imagine what it looks like to lift that weight. How does it feel to lift that weight? You know, what's the feeling afterwards going to be like? What parts of my body are going to feel it? And that mental buildup is just as important as doing the actual lift. So a bit more of a reflective based idea for Coach's Corner this week is to think about, when does your set actually begin? When does your lift actually begin? Because it isn't when the weight's moving. It isn't when you touch the weight. It isn't when you're walking up to the weight. It's all this process leading up to that set, which could be defined as the end of a set is the beginning of your next set.
Oh my gosh, I can so relate to that. I love that. I'm a big visualizer. I knew I had a big deadlift session today. It began for me last night, even during the day yesterday. You know, I made sure that I had my magnesium baths. I did everything because I knew that I needed to get 115 kilos for 10 reps. That's what I needed to do, because the week before I had only allowed myself to get 6, and I just gave up. And I was so annoyed at myself, so annoyed that I just thought, you're not going to feel that way again. And I did not. And I did achieve it. But for me, if I don't see it happening, if I don't see it happening, if I can't visualize it happening before I even get into the gym or my shed, it is not going to happen. It just isn't. There's not some miracle that makes it so. And that used to be also when I was tri-training, doing triathlons. If I didn't see myself coming out of that water, like pretty much first or second out of the pack, I knew that I had lost the whole race, because I just needed that. For me, I needed that head start, just did. So I tried that a few times and it worked, and the other way did not work. So I really believe in visualization for that sort of stuff.
Completely agree. Nick, let's move into some questions that have popped up over the week. And the first one was about endurance events. And the question was that an individual had an endurance-based event coming up. How would they change their nutrition? So you have a lot more experience around nutrition events. What advice would you give someone around nutrition?
Oh, okay. So, well, with endurance events, it's very important that you really make sure that you fuel up. So, I mean, I've had friends that have gone overboard and had, like, you know, 30 pasta meals and before and after and beers and everything. It doesn't need to be like that. That's just a bit of fun. But really the night before is when it all begins. So you need to have a decent carbohydrate-based meal, something that is pretty easy to digest, like a pasta, something that's quite easy to digest. But also the other tip is, you don't ever have something that you've never had before. So if you heard that sort of Karen down the road has, you know, chicken pesto pasta for her pre-race meal, but you've never had that before, I wouldn't go that the night before, because it can cause, you know, just gastric distress. And you don't want that to happen when you're on the road in like an Ironman or something like that, because there's like one toilet and everyone's using it. So the other thing is, pack snacks that you would normally be eating throughout the day. So you need to really practice before your event with your nutrition. That's the other thing. So just say someone says to you, have a gel, and you've never had a gel before. That's not a good idea either. So anything that you've never had before, that's the first one. Don't try it on the day of your event. Secondly, you may be someone that doesn't need to, depends like what the event is. Just say it's a 12-hour Ironman, you do need to eat during it. Just say it's a marathon, you'll probably get away with some sports drinks and things. I'm not sure if during your marathon you had a snack. Did you eat a snack during your marathon?
I had gels.
Yeah. So just something easy to digest. I would say, like, key things for me that I've always had that have always worked well and always will are bananas. Like, they sit very well with me. So really, I could go through a race with 4 bananas. And there's no need to change it up a million times. I like a little bit of salt as well. So for me, I used to, on my bike, have a Vegemite sandwich. So just easy to digest things that are not going to cause you any tummy upsets. Nothing like, you don't have like a chicken curry. You know, you want stuff that's quick, sustainable energy. And do you eat extra calories? It really depends on the length of your event. Because just say it's a 5K run. You probably don't need to eat many more calories than what's already on your plan. You know, it's not going to tax you too much. You know, it's sort of that, like that 1 hour mark. But anything that starts to go over about, you know, say 2 hours plus, you want to include probably an extra, I reckon, 50 calories an hour. just to keep it, you know, pretty good. Because you might, I mean, I can't guarantee that you're not going to be in a slight surplus by the end, but your body will probably need that to recover anyway, and then just get on with your nutrition as normal the next day. That's my advice. Yeah, I'm not, see, gels, I was given a lot of gels at various races, and it was great to have free products that people would give you, but you don't know what's in them, and sometimes they make you feel a bit funny when you're running. But just make sure also you do keep your electrolytes up. So, you know, you've got to have your hydration, but usually, I'm not sure with COVID, I'll find out later on in the year when I do the half Ironman that I've signed up for. I'm not sure if they still give out drinks, but if they do, they have every second station is like an electrolyte-based drink. So that's kind of good to have. And don't, this is my tip, don't have any type of a cola drink during it, no matter, even if someone gives you one and you're a little bit out of it, don't have it, because it will actually dehydrate you. I don't see any point in those, in the cola type situation drinks, and no Red Bulls. I've been through it all, but yeah, that's just sort of more what not to have. But yeah, a little bit more calories, but you know, you don't have to go absolutely overboard.
Next question I wanted to touch on was our good friends DEXA scans and in-body scans and all the other scans in between. And I think this comes up all the time in different challenges that we've had, where individuals would ask, should I get a DEXA scan? Should I get a scan? Or they would post photos of their scans and maybe have some conflicting feelings about the scan results that they have, and maybe lose touch of the challenge process because of these scans. And I think I just want to spend some time discussing them so that you get a better understanding of what they are and if it's worth getting one. So the first thing that we need to understand is that any scan that we get is a prediction. It's a prediction, not a measurement. So we're not accurately measuring how much body fat you have or how much muscle you have or how much bone you have. It's a prediction based on some really complicated formulations and prediction models. Okay, the only way to measure properly someone's body mass or their body fat is through a carcass or a cadaver. So when you're dead and someone would do an autopsy, that's when we're able to measure, because we could pull it apart and measure every fiber, and that's how we get it.
That'd be nice and accurate. You can have it written on your tombstone, you know, 7% body fat.
Oh gosh, can you imagine? Okay, so that's the first thing that we need to understand. Now, the next thing that we need to understand is that when we get a scan, just like we take a photo, we're getting a snapshot in time. And sometimes it might be fleeting to measure all that progress because of a snapshot. Okay. And you know, you can use this as a photo. How many times have you taken a photo and you blink? Oh, you're gonna then make an assumption that you are constantly blinking and your eyes are closed because of the snapshot in time? No. What you might do is take a few different photos and you might think, oh, well, maybe I had a few different poses and this one makes me look better because it's my right side or my good side. Okay. You wouldn't look at one photo and be like, oh, I'm always blinking or I look a certain way or whatever it is, because it's a snapshot in time.
Very true. It's funny how we're happy to do that though, aren't we? With a photo, easily we're happy to go, oh no, that one's crap, delete it.
Exactly. And then move on to the next one. Because we know that a photo can change very quickly from second to second, or you know, from microsecond to microsecond. It's the same thing that could happen with any sort of snapshot about our body composition. And a prime example would be our scales. If you went and stood on the scales and you weighed 100 kilos like me on the dot, and then you consumed a liter of water and then you stepped on the scales again, you'll probably be heavier because you now have more water in your body. So that snapshot has changed in a matter of a few minutes of you consuming that water. Similarly, if you stood on the scales and then went to the toilet and came back, you might be lighter because you have less on you. Or you stood on the scales and then you hopped off, you took off all your clothes and stood back on, all right, you might be 100 grams lighter because of all your clothes. So we do need to understand that these same variables can drastically alter any sort of snapshot that we have, even when we're using really sophisticated tools like DEXA scans or BIA scans or those in-body scans or blood pods or anything in between. We know that with these quite advanced scales, such as our DEXA scans, yes, they're really cool, really sophisticated, really expensive technology, but they still have their error rates that we do need to account for. So starting off with our in-body scans, which are BIA scans, they stand for bioelectrical impedance analysis, okay, BIA. And what it is it's an electrical current. So what it does is the electricity goes through and it predicts how much fat you have versus non-fat. you have. So it's fat mass versus fat-free mass. And we call this a two-compartment model. And I guess there are some problems with that way because that electricity current might not be able to pass through your entire body. So it might go from like hand to hand, but it might miss out on part of your leg, or it could miss out on certain areas of your abdomen and things like that. So that electrical current may miss parts of your body. The next thing is that subcutaneous tissue changes quite a lot depending on things like hydration. So that electrical current may change, even though the hydration of the tissue might be different. There are errors in that actual model, and the error rates are around this like 3%. And we kind of say about 1 to 3% of just the scan itself. Okay. Now, with that scan itself, there are error rates for the individual scan. So if you were to take the scan and then a few seconds later take the scan again, there can be up to a 10% difference between those scans. So each individual scan can have an error. Okay. So we've got errors on the machine, we've got errors on the scan. And then if you were to scan yourself in week one of the challenge and then again at week 12, there is a tracking error of about 10% as well. Okay. So what that means, putting it all together, is that if you were to use an in-body scan at week one and then at week 12, you're looking at potentially 25% error rates in those two scans. So if it says that your fat-free mass is 80 kilos and you're 100 kilos, and then your fat mass is 20 kilos, and that then predicts you being 20% body fat, there could be an error rate of up to 25%, meaning that you could be anywhere from, let's say, 25 to 15 kilos of body fat on you, meaning the difference between 15% and 25% body fat. And this can be huge.
That's ridiculous.
And this is, I guess, on that upper limit. But those small numbers are so important to us where we go, oh, well, I started the challenge at 15% body fat, but then now at the end of the challenge, it says that I'm 16% body fat, but I've lost weight. And you go, well, what's happening? It's like, well, okay, it might be an error in that machine itself. Then, of course, you factor in all the other variables of life. Okay. When did you eat last? How stressed are you? What was your sleep quality like? How hydrated are you? What's the humidity of the room that you're in? Did you exercise just previously? Like all these factors, then add in another variable, which we often don't consider, where we don't go, oh, well, yeah, I tried to line all the ducks up. And the second time I just did it in the afternoon because I was just there and it's a big difference. I was like, well, yeah, because the variables are completely different, right? It's like you being upset that you're wearing a red dress in a photo. And then the next time you take the photo, you're in shorts and a t-shirt and the photos don't look the same. And you're upset about that. It's like, well, they're very different photos. So remember that the snapshot has variables. The machines itself have variables. The scan itself has variables. And then comparing them has their own challenges. And I guess anecdotally, and this is probably the worst type of scientific evidence, my experience with something like a BIA scan or those in-body scans is that we used to have one in a gym that I worked at. And I personally went on one, scanned myself, and I said I was like 6% body fat. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. About half an hour later, I went and scanned it again. I said I was 3% body fat. I'm like, oh, cool. I lost 3% body fat. How good is this? And then maybe 2 hours after that, I scanned myself again. I was actually trying to show off to a friend of mine, being look at my body fat. And then I said I was 12% body fat. And I was like, well, this is dumb. What's happening?
That sucks. And then you're like, that one's not right.
Look at this one before. So yeah, okay, it has its own problems. And heck, even just down to where you hold it on the machine can have those problems. Now, when we look at something like a DEXA scan would be our gold standard, expensive bit of machinery. It's a three compartment, so it can differentiate between fat, bone, mineral, and non-bone, so it gets a better picture. So a two compartment, like a BIA, would predict how much body fat you have and then predict how much of everything else you have, and then make an assumption that you have this much muscle, this much organ tissue, this much bone, that type of thing. Whereas a DEXA scan can predict how much fat you have, how much bone mineral you have, and then how much non-bone mass you have. So that can help you if you have, let's say, osteoporosis, because then you go, okay, your bone mineral density is this, you're losing bone mass, rah, rah, rah. But even with a DEXA scan, even though they're our gold standard and probably like up the top of measurements, they have their own error rates. And error rates can be up to 5% per machine, okay, up to about 10% per scan, and then again about 10% with individual tracking. So again, if you were to measure yourself in week one and then measure yourself in week 12 with a DEXA scan, there could be, you know, error rates of up to, you know, 20% between those two scans. And that could be completely disheartening for individuals out there where they go, well, I'm losing muscle mass, or I'm gaining body fat, or I'm losing X, Y, and Z. What's happening to me? the main takeaway here is that even with these technological advancements, they have their error rates. If we consistently use snapshots in time and try to compare, 3 weeks apart from each other, it can be fleeting because we may be missing out on all these changes in between. The best way to track our progress is something like using moving averages, which is why we like to measure our body weight daily, because it's a cheap, quick way to measure our total body mass and then get the overall average for the week so that we can compare averages over time rather than just snapshots in time, which may not be useful. If you are interested in using a DEXA scan, you may find benefits of getting something like an annual DEXA scan. So every year you're using this snapshot to get a very rough estimate in time, being like, oh yeah, this year I have about 80 kilos of muscle mass. And then the next year I have 85 kilos of muscle mass. Okay, I'm seeing general improvements in muscle mass, but you may have a better understanding of your total muscle mass improvements by simply looking at actual photos of yourself and using something like the scales to go, oh, well, my body mass is increasing. I'm now 105 kilos in body mass, but I don't really look much or have much more body fat, but I know that I'm getting much stronger in my lifts. Okay, I can then conclude through my own prediction models that, hey, I'm gaining muscle mass. Great, I'm moving in the right direction. So to answer the question, no, you don't need to use any sophisticated measuring tools that have their own error rates. And you might be better off just measuring your scale weight, taking some photos, tracking your progress in the gym, and make sure that you're heading in the right direction depending on your goals and that it makes sense to you. Okay, if your weight is going up, but then your strength is going down, okay, that you might scratch your head and be like, that doesn't make sense. But if your weight's going up, training in the gym's going up, and you look leaner in the mirror, okay, you must be getting muscle, you must be losing body fat because you're moving in the right direction. You don't need to take this DEXA scan, save your money, and go buy some gym equipment.
Yeah, and definitely don't base any massive life decisions on it, like quitting the challenge or something because of your DEXA.
I think that's an important one to acknowledge as well, where some would throw their hands up in the air and be like, well, that's it, fitness didn't work for me, I guess I'll go back to whatever it was before. Because, you know, I'm not losing any body fat according to this DEXA scan, even though my pants are looser on me. I look great in a mirror. I'm training hard in the gym. You know, people are saying that I've lost weight, but my DEXA scan doesn't say that. So I guess, you know, fitness isn't working for me. Okay. We can all understand that's probably not the best logical conclusion to come to.
Yeah. Don't let it derail you.
Look, Nick, let's talk a little bit about lockdown. And
we're good at this
with parts of the country in lockdown at the moment and other parts looming potential lockdowns. Of course, there's questions that come up of, should I change my nutrition plan or my caloric intake? What advice would you give someone if they're thinking about, you know, if they should change some of their nutrition plan, maybe because they are now training from home and they can't train as hard at home as they could in the gym?
Yeah, maybe quote unquote as hard as well, because yeah, you probably could. It really is going to depend on your level of awareness of your body. But first up, okay, just say you've lockdown's got you down and you've decided to sit on the couch and not move and not do any steps and eat and that kind of thing. Then I would say in that case, that might be something where you'd have to look at it over maybe a week or two and maybe decide to not eat as much as if you were training fully to your full potential. But I really, from what I've seen on the Facebook group, on the forums, I think everybody's pretty motivated to get through this. So first up, if your goal is to build muscle, don't change anything. You don't want to suddenly starve like your muscles away. That you want to go into a nice phase where you're trying to maintain what you've got. You might not be able to gain a whole bunch of extra, but you certainly can maintain the muscle mass that you've got and just do some extra things around that, but also keep your steps up. We always say keep your steps up. It's probably the one thing that you're allowed to do during a lockdown is walk, and that's really where you are going to, I guess, burn the calories anyway. So if we're talking about straight calories, keep them where they are. If you're doing, say Tone and Shape, at the moment we are going down with the calories anyway, so they're not massive anyway. So I would be sticking to everything. I would be doing the best that you can with what you've got and try not to have too many, like, just sitting down Netflix binges. So maybe do your exercise first and then you can sit down and have a Netflix binge. You know, I would get the training done, but I wouldn't be dropping any calories at this point. Should the lockdowns be extended for ages, then there's a sort of a different thing coming into play. But at the moment, I feel like everyone's cruising quite nicely and we shouldn't mess with anything.
Look, I agree. And I think that some consistency in our food intake may be a grounding effort, because if we're in lockdown, some things in our lives we don't have control over, maybe the first thing to go is our food. We go, screw it. I'm just going to order Uber Eats and go back to eating ice cream and open up the liquor cabinet. And then, you know, everything's derailed again. Maybe one way to keep us grounded is some sort of nutrition plan, some sort of habit, some sort of routine, getting our meal prep done, having some organization and control over our food rather than letting everything go. So maybe just keeping on track and keeping everything as it is, maybe a way to ground yourself in these times of uncertainty. I think you're completely right, where our biggest aspect of energy expenditure comes from our NEAT, so our things like our step count. If we are at home, we do need to appreciate that you might be more inclined to sit on the couch, you might be more inclined, less inclined to go to the shops, get some steps up, go catch up with your friends, these types of things. And of course, as a combination of all these aspects, our overall energy expenditure may slowly decrease. And we do need to appreciate that. But as you said, if you can keep your steps up, okay, we can kind of negate and supplement some of these lack of movement things that are happening in our life so that we can increase our energy expenditure while not having to play around with our energy intake that much.
Yeah, because I also think psychologically being in a massive calorie deficit during a lockdown, I know because I was prepping twice for shows during last year, it doesn't do you any favors because you're not showing anyone anything. You're really just, you know, number one, it's sort of like we're trying to preserve everything, but we also need to make sure that our environment is good, that our brain is good, that we're feeling good, because we've got self-preservation at this point and, you know, just looking after ourselves. And just nourish yourself. You know, don't maybe buy 20 tubs of ice cream, but maybe make some nice soups. You know, it's getting colder, things like that. And don't stress too much about all the different foods. Just stick to your plan.
Now, look, let's finish today on some advice on what people could watch, some content that people could watch on Netflix, on YouTube, if they are going to have a sit down binging episode on some sort of content, some media. And we thought we can maybe Nick and I can give you some advice on what you could watch that maybe you'd come out of lockdown a little bit wiser, a little bit more inspired, motivated, or a better understanding around the sport of fitness, health, and everything in between. Now, I think I could start us off. And I think one of my favorite things to do is just to kind of jump down the rabbit hole of YouTube. And one of my favorite things to do when I was at uni was to have lots of open and unstructured learning. So I might start by looking at one article. There might be a few words I don't understand. I'll go Google something. I'll end up on a YouTube video explaining this concept, and I'll go back to Google Scholar, and I'm back and forth. So I like to have these kind of unstructured, open learning kind of things. And it kind of opens me up to really weird and wacky rabbit holes, mainly around fitness and health. I'm not really tinfoil hat man yet, but it's mainly around this fitness and health. And, you know, I guess I can touch on a few channels that I really enjoy watching, and channels that I might pick up lots of information, which kind of gets passed on into places like The Challenge. Okay. So I think really up there would be something like Renaissance Periodization. So that's mainly run by Dr. Mike Israetel. And I really like Dr. Mike. He's a really switched on, logical guy from the US. And he's a professor, he's a lecturer, and he's also just a gym bro at heart, where he cracks jokes, he swears, he carries on. But then he's like super structured in the way that he approaches information. So check out RP or Renaissance Periodization on YouTube. And they've got some great, you know, short form content, long form content, explaining everything from nutrition to training to, you know, different macro ideas on what is strength, what is fitness, those types of things. And then as a byproduct of RP would be something like JTS, which is Juggernaut Training Systems. That's, I think, still directed by Mike Israetel and Chad Wesley Smith. And that's more of a strength side of things, where RP is a bit more physique. And then JTS is a little bit more of strength style content. And again, go and start digesting some of their information. Really great foundations of training and nutrition. Another one I love is Jeff Nippard. So Jeff is very evidence-based, and he does lots of really like pretty content, as in like just nice polished information, where he's very evidence-based, you know, who bring up articles, he explain them in simple terms, and talking everything from, you know, how to do a squat to how to build a program, or, you know, what is this nutrition aspect, those types of things. So make sure you go check out Jeff Nippard. And then as a byproduct, we all love our Jeff Cavalier from Athlete X, shredded guy, Mr. YouTube himself, who comes up with all its lots of weird and wacky concepts. And some of those concepts, you know, I might squint my eyes and be like, oh, it's not quite, but again, like the way that he portrays that information is always applicable to training, more so that training side of things, and the guy shredded too. So it's really interesting to watch. If you're not inclined with anatomy or biomechanics, even just watching how he moves and you see muscle fibers in his body, it's just really cool to see as it is, and see how he's in a lat pull down, seeing the difference between him doing a chin up this way versus that way, and seeing how the back activates, which is cool in itself. Another one I really love is The Ready States. That's by Kelly Starrett. And Kelly Starrett wrote books like Becoming a Supple Leopard and Born to Run and these types of things. And I get a lot of my soft tissue mobilization creative ideas from Kelly. So make sure you go check out The Ready State. Really switched on, really forward thinking philosophy type stuff around movement and soft tissue, especially if you're around this week of recovery. If you want to look at lots of small picture, small window ideas, go check out The Ready State. I really love those guys and girls. And then lately I've been watching lots of Joe Bennett. So he's the hypertrophy coach. That's his handle on Instagram. And this guy is a meathead bro. He's jacked, he's smart, he's Mr. Biomechanics. I love listening to him, how he talks about movement, and just makes me think about things differently. So go check out Joe Bennett as well.
Oh, they're awesome. YouTube. Awesome, yeah. Recommendations. I love it.
Do you have any recommendations for YouTube?
I've got I love Stephanie Buttermore. Now, she is actually Jeff Nippard's girlfriend. So they sort of live together and they don't anyway, but yeah. So I guess I kind of find out the more personal stuff, because always, there's always something going on. But she talks a lot about her relationship with food and all sorts of different things that she's had to do to reset her metabolism in a way, just because she used to always be hungry. So she has a big journey about that. And it's quite interesting to see, because I think as women, sometimes we ignore our hunger signals because we're told that we should eat less or feel full. But a lot of women can eat a whole lot. You know, we can eat lots. And so it's just interesting to see the science behind that and some ways that she's explained it. So that's really good. Then there's Soph Allen, who's a bit more gen pop, but she really has a lot of interesting home training things, but also talks about her life and opens up about different, say, gut health issues that she's had, different skin issues, stuff like that, just things that women love to hear about, but we don't really talk about too much, because especially not from these glamorous Instagram influencers. So it's just nice to have somebody who's had to go through different things. She's had to gain some weight to get healthy again. So just really interesting to see a real person's journey. And then I love anything to do with Australian strength coach Sebastian Aurib, and anything that he does with Hattie Boydell, because I love watching Hattie, you know, squat 150 kilos when she weighs like 50 kilos. I love that. So sometimes they'll just do little YouTubes talking about the process, or anything to do with Hattie's mindset. I love, because she hasn't been able to build the physique that she's got without obviously having a really solid mindset. So I always just think, well, if Hattie can do it, I can do it. So I love watching those. So that's just some really strong women things that people can look up just to be inspired, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I do love Seb Aurib a lot. I do like a lot of his stuff on Instagram. It's just, it seems like a funny bloke. I just kind of like want to train with the guy. He just seems like fun.
Yeah, I wish he was in Melbourne, because, it'd be so much fun.
Yeah.
It's just really cool, because also they smash their weights, and it's so good. I just love it.
Look, let's talk about a few. We've spoken about a few YouTube channels, but let's talk about a few documentaries. Now, I think the first thing that we need to acknowledge is that there are some interesting documentaries out there. And I think as a general saying, when we come to like nutritional documentaries, I think lots of them, you should take them with a grain of salt, where there are often agendas with certain nutritional documentaries, and they often like to cherry pick certain scientific articles. And for many of them, they are not really helpful for our own nutritional journeys. And I think if you were to go through Netflix and watch all of the nutritional docos on Netflix, you probably wouldn't eat a bit of food for the rest of your life. You'd be like, oh, I'm not eating carbs or fats or protein. I'm not going to drink water anymore. I'm not going to have sugar. I'm not going to eat vegetables because they're bad. I'm not going to eat fruits because they're bad. Everything's bad and shouldn't even breathe anymore because that's bad.
There's a documentary on just breathing. So you're still allowed to breathe, but then, you know, even that.
So I think whenever I watch a nutritional documentary on like somewhere like a Netflix, I do kind of like, and I end up actually turning it off because I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. And I actually go and look up some of the research articles that they were claiming. I was like, I don't know about that. So yeah, I don't think I have any big recommendations for nutritional documentaries.
I'm on the same page as you, because very often if you look at, maybe it's a documentary on bread and it might be sponsored by the, you know, American Wheat Foundation. You know, you don't know where it's coming from, but it sometimes is a big ad. So you just got to be bit smart.
But what I do love watching documentaries on sports. I do love watching sports documentaries, and especially the sport of fitness. And I think the first one foremost, we can't go past it, is something like Pumping Iron. So Pumping Iron, the classic with Arnie, is just a classic. It has quotable moments. It really summarizes the idea of bodybuilding. So if you haven't already, go check out Pumping Iron. And of course, the sequels such as Generation Iron, Generation Iron 2, they're not the same, but they're still okay. And that, I guess, shows the evolution of the fitness industry, where gone are the days of, like, you know, the Arnold days, the golden era of bodybuilding. And now it is very much driven by social media, driven by marketing and selling products and, you know, how popular is a person rather than how developed is their physique, like in the golden days. So very interesting to see how the industry has changed, how politics gets involved and all those bits and pieces in, you know, what we think is a physique driven sport. It might not be completely, but interesting. Yeah. I think some of my favorite documentaries on sports is the strongman documentaries. So documentaries like Born Strong or Eddie Strongman were really cool to watch, and seeing just the amount of work that some of these strongmen go through. And, you know, some of these guys lifting disgusting numbers, but then you don't see that they're needing to consume like 10,000 calories a day. Like, they're just genuinely eating all day, every day, to try to maintain that capacity of their body. But then all the negative side effects that come from that, like, you know, half of them don't even sleep. They all need like the sleeping devices.
Yeah, for the sleep apnea.
The sleep apnea devices and such. And yeah, you know, they're just like destroying their bodies, even though they can lift disgusting amounts. Yeah, I found them so fascinating. Yeah. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, I love any of the CrossFit documentaries, because coming from the background that I've come from, that's a bit of endurance and a bit of sort of cardio based, I love the fusion of the cardio and the weights, especially Olympic lifting, all of that put into one, where they have to do it all, and they have to do it all extremely well, because if they fail at one bit, it's really their downfall in the entire competition. So I love the fact that they honor both sides of the coin. You know, say like one time Rich Froning couldn't run 3Ks, so he lost the whole CrossFit Games. And it was interesting, because then the year after that, he came back and was like, okay, I'm going to show them. And he was a really bad swimmer too. So Rich Froning, he's interesting. His documentary is really good too. He had a garage gym before any of us did. You know, in that documentary, probably going back looking at it, you'd probably go, oh, yeah, that's just a normal garage gym. But at the time it was like, whoa, I can't believe he trains at home and look what he's got. And so, yeah, I love those. So that's Fittest Man in History and Fittest on Earth. And I think that they've now got quite a few spin-offs from that. I went to the CrossFit Games live way back when we were allowed to go to live things. And I've got to tell you, watching it in the documentary was actually better, because you're too far away when it's live. You can't really see them. So it's much more fun watching the documentaries. They really make good ones. So I love that. I love Icarus, because about cycling and how, yeah, this guy tries some performance enhancing drugs, but actually, yeah, I won't give it away. But anyway, it's very interesting. Very good. Very good. Have you seen that one?
I have. Yeah, I did enjoy
it. Did you like that?
Yeah, it opened my eyes to a lot of like doping and stuff. I guess it opened my eyes even more so of how just normal it was, and how people were beating the tests and stuff. And it just makes you like scratch your head of being like, oh, well, if this is happening in like cycling, how else is it being used across all sports in all levels of competition, you know? It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it was just also so interesting when, like, because even the people that do it, they've got a special something, because he did everything in his power and still was pretty crap. So it's just really interesting. It shows you that all that side of the coin, you've got to be pretty bloody elite as it is. So I love that. Limitless for running, that's awesome as well. So
was Limitless the Indian running one? Oh, that was really cool. Yeah, we haven't mentioned West Side versus the World. That was a weightlifting one. I think that was cool. One of my favorite little rabbit holes I went into was to look at like the history of fitness, like how fitness culture became a thing. And there was this series on YouTube, actually, which is made by Rogue. So Rogue, the gym equipment company, called the Rogue Legends series. And they did little documentaries on things like Sandow. And Sandow is one of like the first kind of like bodybuilders. And he's actually the statue in like the Olympia is the Sandow, which is the Sandow, right? Or Apollon and a whole bunch of other people in history who really push the fitness culture. And, you know, these are the first people that would do like, you know, circus tricks, lifting weights and these types of things. So that was always really fascinating to listen how, you know, how the barbell became a thing, or how, you know, Sandow was selling equipment or programs that everyone could, you know, look like him and stuff like that. Yeah, it's kind of like the very first superheroes, right, in the world, because people were like, wow, they come far and wide just to watch this person lift up a rock. And that's kind of how this all began. So it's interesting to look back in history, and so there's some really cool documentaries, and there's really some really cool museums around the world which kind of highlight all these parts in history. So you know, we can't really travel around the world to these museums, but we can watch a few documentaries on them.
See, that's so cool. I reckon if you're feeling a bit down and out, you watch a couple of these and you'll go and dust off the weights in your shed in no time. You'll be like, wait a minute, just don't try any Olympic lifts and stuff if you haven't warmed up. Don't get too inspired by CrossFit and do burpees over your barbell and, you know, hurt yourself or anything. Just realize that they do it all the time.
Well, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there. Thank you for listening to the Challenge Weekly Show, episode number 24, our 24-hour episode.
24 hours together.
24 hours together. If you like this episode, you can leave us a review on iTunes or share it with a friend. Help us share the good word. So hopefully these podcasts are able to help you. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Coach Steve. See you soon. Bye.